the quorum present, like to convene the meeting, the SURF meeting of January 2021. Again, Happy New Year to all. Hope it's a very healthy new year for you all. I'd like to take the opportunity to navigate through the agenda to try to put items on initially that are require a vote. That being the case, if I can put item one on hold for a moment, go to item two, approval of meeting minutes for the meeting of December 2020. What's the board's pleasure?
Mr. Chair, Mark Petrosimone, I move for approval.
And this is Kathy Graves, I sick.
Okay, can I hear all the, is there any discussion on this motion? In the absence of all those in favor, indicate by name if you are an aye.
Mark Petrosimone, aye.
Kathy Graves, aye.
Michael Gormany, aye.
Susan Whetstone, aye.
Justin Illicker, aye.
Anyone, is there any opposition? Motion carries. Administrative matters will hold for a moment. Item four, age annuity, rule of 80, early retirement. It's information only, does not require any deliberation or vote by the trustees. However, if there are any questions on item four, we'd like to entertain them. If not, we can move on to item five, contribution withdrawals. Again, information only, unless the trustees have a specific question on item five. Item six, disability retirement reexaminations. As we have indicated in the past, when employees retire to disability, it is required by the plan that they are subject to three subsequent medical examinations by the fund's medical consultant in the 5 years subsequent to the retirement. That being the case, we have some people on the agenda today who have gone for, we have one individual, I'm sorry, who has gone for his reexamination. Yale Occupational has provided the trustees with a review of her current situation, current condition, and the trustees will now determine if they accept the evaluation and if her disability is allowed to continue.
I'd like to move that we accept the results of the reexamination.
Kathy Graves.
This is Kathy Graves.
Okay, thank you. So moved. Is there a second?
Mark Petrosimone, I second it.
Is there discussion on item six? Not all in favor, indicate by identification if you are aye.
Kathy Graves, aye.
Mark Petrosimone, aye.
Michael Gormany, aye.
Susan Whetstone, aye.
Justin Ellicker, aye.
No oppositions. Item six carries. Item seven, death after retirement. That's information only. Nancy Sacco. Item eight, survivor, death after retirement. Information only again. Gene Fitzgerald. I'd like to call upon the trustees if we can have a moment of silence for the repose of your souls. Thank you. Item nine, payment of bills. Board's pleasure.
I'd like to move, this is Kathy Graves. I'd like to move that we pay the bills as stated.
So moved. Is there a second?
Susan Whetstone, second.
Is there discussion on the motion? If not, all in favor indicate by identification if you are an aye.
This is Kathy Graves, aye.
Mark Petrosimone, aye.
Michael Gormley, aye.
Susan Whetstone, aye.
Justin Elker, aye.
You have no opposition? No abstentions? The motion carries. I'd like to return back to administrative matters. Item three, Hooker and Holcomb is present to make sure that the plan is in conformity and that there is a listing of expenditures or anticipated expenditures for the fund. Who is going to take the discussion on item A? Is legal counsel here today? Liana?
Yes, Carolyn is present.
I'm sorry. If I could just quickly start with this and then turn it over to, I see that we have three people from Hooker and Holcomb. The plan requires that the board forward to, we'll say, the Board of Alders, a list of their projected administrative expenses for the upcoming fiscal year. And we have not done this in the past, and I'll let Hooker and Holcomb explain how it's been done in the past. The city has paid for the administrative expenses, but the Police and Fire Board member brought it to our attention that actually having the board approve the projected administrative expenses is required. And I looked at our plan, and we have the same, SURF plan has the same requirement. So if I could turn over, would it be Rich who will talk about how it's been done in the past and then the proposal for it going forward?
Yes. Thank you, Carolyn. So in the past, what we do is we include estimated administrative expenses in the calculation of the contribution. The way we do that is we go back to the most current fiscal year. We look at the administrative expenses that have been paid in that fiscal year and we round up. And we use that as an estimate in the calculation of the contribution. And then for the following year, it's adjusted with inflation.
So for next year, can you explain what the proposal would be for, that would be the fiscal year that begins on July 1, 2021 and continues to June 30th, 2022.
So what we did is we went back and we looked at the administrative expenses for the fiscal year ending June 30th, 2020, which is the valuation date. And we adjusted that up or rounded that up. And I think the number is, and David or Dan, correct me, it's like
$410,000.
So it rounds up to $420,000.
Oh, I'm sorry, $420,000. Oh, $420,000, okay. So in my memo, I was wrong. And then for next year, you added an inflation factor.
Correct.
Of 2.5% to round up an estimate of $430,500 for the projected expenses for the next fiscal year. And there's a breakdown on my memo of what the expenses were for the current fiscal year, or the year before, actually, the one that ended on June 30th.
This is Mark Petrosimone. I have a question. I'm looking at the spreadsheet that was sent to us. I got 409,390.39.
Right.
How come that doesn't round up to 410? We got it's rounding up to 420, and then
yeah,
yeah, that's what I have at 410. I think that's correct. That's what I had in my memo, 410. And then when the inflation factor of 2.5%, is this correct? We get a projected cost of 430,500. So you're right.
I have a different question. Are any of these expense or providers under multi-year contracts. So let's say, for example, Northern Trust, if we know that we have a five-year contract and it's going to go up by some certain amount each year, why wouldn't we use that actual contractual obligation, except that there may not be any contractual obligations like that?
You know, I don't know what our Northern Trust is. Maybe agreement is for our firm, Hooker and Holcomb, and for Yale Occupational, everybody is on a these three are on multi-year contracts, but it's a fixed for all 3 years. So there's no,
right.
Yeah.
Right. So
I think that Northern Trust is calculated based on the asset values at the end of each quarter. So that could be the
right
the way it's calculated and paid out quarterly. But I think it's calculated based on the asset value, the value of the assets.
Right. Did someone look at that
so to not make fixed. Sure
that the percentage that's being applied is going to cover? It just seems a strange way to do it when some of these are pretty big numbers. Don't we have a contract with Raymond James that's multi-year?
We do. I mean, it's not multi-year, but it is, as Trustee Graves explained, this is Carolyn, it's based on the asset value. And I have to say, this has been done for at least 10 years, and there's always been money to pay, but, you know, the vendors. Trustee Gormany, do you have any comments? Because there were two items we weren't sure about.
No, I'm not sure if Leanna looked into the two items that we discussed. I believe Leanna was looking into those. As far as just an explanation on some of these items. I know the ADR fee we found out, but we were looking into some of the other items as far as reimbursements from the
fund. Yeah, we had to speak to this is Leanna, we had to speak to accounting, I guess Andre in accounting, mm-hmm. the one who sent this list, but I have not heard from him of the two asterisks because I'm unaware of what those two are for.
Yeah, I haven't heard from our accounting department yet, so I can certainly keep the trustees updated once I hear back from them.
So, Carolyn, are you asking the board to approve next year's administrative fee budget?
Yes.
I would say for the future, there are things that I would want to see if you're asking me to approve this.
Sure.
And I'd want to see the prior year and the so I'd want to see 2019, the current, the past, let's see, 2019, 2020, and 2021. I'd want to get some idea where expenses are going and if they're going up in what categories. I'm just feeling that if we have to approve it, then we have some management responsibility for it. And if we have some management responsibility for it, we should know what our expenses are and whether they're increasing or decreasing or need to be managed in some way.
Just to comment on that, Susan, I know for for Raymond James and Northern Trust, it would be in our best interest to see it go up because it's based on asset value. So we want to see our assets increase. So if they're calculated based on end of quarter asset values and dividing it by four when they're paying out, I mean, we want to see our asset values increase.
Yeah, I don't have a
problem. That's not going to be.
We should be able to know and explain as board members what the budget is doing from year to year. If you're asking us to approve it, then you're asking us to take responsibility for those expenses, whether they go up or down.
Yeah.
Rich, let me ask this question, Hooker Holcomb. In order to provide a comfort zone, how difficult would it be to provide Trustee Whetstone and the other trustees with the format that she's looking for, that will do a comparative analysis of the costs over the last 2 years and anticipated for the current year?
I don't think we have detail for every year that have to come from your accounting department. So for example, this year, what we do is we have the expenses for the last fiscal year, and then we use inflation as an estimate for the upcoming 2 years. So I think your accounting department would probably have to go back and just give you a breakdown of what those expenses were for the last few years.
Hi, this is Trustee Gormley. What I can do for Trustee Whetstone and the other trustees is I can ask our accounting department if we have the last 3 years of estimated or actual expenses. To be honest, I'm not sure how long that will take them, but we can certainly try to get it to the trustees in a timely manner.
All right, so I think there's some wisdom and logic to what Trustee Whetstone is asking for. So if there's a way that we can try to accommodate that, I'd like to see it myself. All right, Susan, we're going to try to get that information. But in the
meantime,
would you feel comfortable voting on this issue today?
Yes.
Gary, this is Mark Petrosmo. Do we confirm if the number is 410?
It is 410.
Pardon me?
It's 410, yes.
410, okay.
That's what we had in the memo. I had in the memo, that's correct.
Okay, can I ask one more question? When this is, what happens to this number after it's submitted to the board? I mean, the board votes on, what do they do with the number?
So this is Trustee Gormany. So what would happen in the past is Hooker and Holcomb would submit the ADEC payment, and I'm going to just throw it on the screen for a second. So Hooker and Holcomb would submit the ADEC payment, and for the current fiscal year, it was $22.6 million. What the plan document says is we are supposed to separate it out when we submit it to the Board of Alders. So this is the current way that we do it. What we would do is there's no change in the actual ADEC number. We're just splitting out the actual ADEC, but all the funding, just like the normal ADEC payment, would get transferred over to the fund. So this is really just to satisfy that requirement as far as just splitting out what the actual ADEC payment is and what the estimated expenses is. But the city is not controlling the expenses. We're still transferring all that money to the plan.
Thank you, Michael.
So, Michael, could I ask a question? If it goes to the Board of Aldermen and they haven't previously seen this breakout before, they don't know what our administrative expenses have been, and they could have questions about those administrative expenses. They could be surprised by the administrative expenses. Okay, so I just want to make sure that as a board, they could be looking to us to explain why are our administrative expenses $400,000 a year.
No, that's a great point, Trustee Whetstone. And I'm glad that you asked the question because the board will most likely question that. The Board of Alders has generally gone with what Hooker and Holcomb has suggested as the ADEC, but you're correct. And I think that's something from an administrative standpoint that I'm working on as we prepare the fiscal year 22 budget and basically looking at an explanation that when we give them certain documentation to explain.
One last question, I promise it'll be my last one. Do we have any benchmark so that if this is, let's say it's 10% of the total ADAC, do we know what, is there a benchmark out there that if we were saying to the Board of Aldermen, this is what our expenses are, and they are on par with other municipal pension funds? I mean, just something that doesn't seem like it's just made up.
Susan? So I'm just going to repeat myself here. The bulk of these expenses are based on asset values of the fund at the end of each quarter. And looking at it, this 409, it's just actual expenses with an inflation factor, right? Up to 430, correct?
Yes. Yeah, we adjust each year for inflation.
Right. So these are actual expenses with the inflation factor, and this is simply a budget, correct? We could come in lower than this.
Correct.
See, if I were on the Board of Aldermen, mm-hmm. I would ask the question, what is the percentage you're paying on asset value and why can't you get that down?
Because our assets keep growing based on our performance.
Right, but the percentage of it could be brought down. Let's say we're paying 1% of asset value. Maybe we should only be paying 0.5% of asset value. My experience with the Board of Aldermen is when they see big numbers, there's lots of questions that are raised. And I think we just need to be prepared to, you know, have a good understanding of why the expenses are what they are, that we've done everything we can to manage them and that we're managing them reasonably. But I would expect them to have questions.
I think that also it helps when you understand how pensions operate and many of them don't. So it's going to raise questions. And that's very real. And that's something I've experienced.
Carolyn, I'd like to ask a question. This Board of Aldermen review of pension expenses has brought something into my mind that occurred some years ago. And you correct me if I'm wrong from a legal standpoint. It's my impression that once the SERF trustees deliberate and agree upon by vote what the ADEC is going to be for SERF, the Board of Aldermen, that's pretty much written in stone. The Board of Aldermen cannot change that figure.
That's been our position.
Okay, and the other fund, I believe, there is some latitude that they have. Am I correct, the Board of Aldermen? Or is it both funds are set up the same way?
No, I think the SERF fund, I think they may have more latitude on the PNF fund. I'd have to look at it, but I know the SERF fund, the language is that it's to be included in the budget.
So once the ADAC goes over for SERF, the Board of Aldermen, whether they like it or not, that's pretty much ensconced in stone. They can't change that.
Our position. They may need some education about that. But
yeah, obviously they have the right to contest that, but it's always been legal opinion that they can stomp their feet and not like it, but they have to fund it and that's the end of it.
That's right.
As far as Trustee Whetstone's questions, her questions are more related to the separate issue of the expenditures, which I think she's correct. They would have the right to question that. Now, would they have the right at that point in time to say, we want you to go back and sharpen your pencil because we think that there's some room for you to make changes here? I mean, they can't do that with the ADAC. We've established that. Or it's our legal opinion. But can they do that with the expenditure? Yeah. It's a separate issue.
I think not. But I would have to look into that more closely. But I think it's the same thing that this board sends over the expenses to the Board of Alders, mm-hmm. and it must be included in the budget.
So I just want to say, in looking at the 409, it's going to come in about $3,000 lower for last year because I don't think anyone attended a conference last year. So if the budget is obviously high, but it's better to be high than in a negative position. So it's probably going to be, if these are based on actual expenses, I mean, it may come in flat.
This is Justin Ellicker. I thought Trustee Whetstone had a good suggestion of just coming when presenting to the Board of Alders with benchmarks, which you could probably Google around. I'm sure that Derek has some benchmarks of what typically the fees are with investment, to just get, frame the conversation so that people better understand how much it costs to investment fees cost.
Yes, you know, certainly we can address the, you know, so obviously we're on an asset base fee, it's 9 basis points, which is 0.09%. So it's, you know, very, very, very narrow, and we can certainly address where that falls in the universe. But as far as the other fees, obviously, I don't know that we can address that. And then the Northern Trust fee, I think Kathy was correct, it's an asset-based fee, but it's also, correct me if I'm wrong, Leanna, they're the ones doing the pension benefit payments. So they charge per check that goes out and W-9s and all the things that they do. So I think it's a component of how many beneficiaries or retirees are getting checks. So I think that number is pretty variable in that regard as well.
Rich Hooker, welcome. Have you done the same type of cost analysis for other clients, municipal clients that you have?
On the investment expenses?
Right.
Yes.
Well, are we in the same ballpark as those other estimates? We don't necessarily have to know the name of the city right now or town, but can you tell us along the lines of Susan's question, are we pretty much in the mainstream with the other analysis that you've done for other plans?
Yeah, in terms of percentage of assets, it's in within the range of reasonableness. We haven't done a forensic audit or anything on the assets, but nothing jumps out as, oh my goodness, that seems really high.
It doesn't seem that our figures are exorbitant, comparatively speaking. Well, I think
even if you're able to just following up on Susan's question, if we're looking back 3 years, are we still in the $400,000 range?
No.
Well, that's our asset values changed. No, scratch that. I'm sorry. But just to see what the trend has been for our fund in terms of expenses. If it's trending flat or if it's going, well, it's probably going up based on assets. But in showing that, maybe you need to show the asset values each year or that fluctuation. I'm not sure, just for comparative purposes.
Well, in the meantime, on item A, is there a way that we can at least call for a vote now so we are in conformity with the plan requirements that a figure be submitted for the Board of Aldermen along with the ADAC figure?
Well, we're not doing the ADAC today. I mean, that's the next item, but yes.
Right.
It's Carolyn.
Right, so can we have an approval from the trustees on the cost estimate that is going to the Board of Aldermen?
Jerry, in the action required by the board, it says 430. Are we doing 430, 500, or are we doing the 420, 250?
I believe we're doing Carolyn, 430, 500 is the projected expenses for next fiscal year.
Okay. Maybe my math is wrong, but if it's 410, 2.5%, wouldn't it be?
What would that be?
Wouldn't it be $420,250? Is it 2.5%, 410, 10,250? $410,000 plus $10,250 be $420,250 and not the $430,500.
Thank you.
Okay, so we're gonna action required is $420,250.
Correct.
Is there a motion to that effect?
Mr. Chair, I'll make that motion that we approve of whatever the hell we're calling this for $420,250.
Or administrative expenses.
Trustee Petrosimona has moved.
Serf administrative expenses for 21-22, $420,250.
So moved. Is there a second to that motion?
I can second it.
Kathy. Oh, Jeff. Sorry. Go ahead.
Beat you to it, Kathy.
Second the motion. Is there a discussion on this motion? In the absence of a motion been properly made and second, all in favor indicate by identification if you are an aye.
Michael Gormley, aye.
Mark Petrosimone, aye.
Kathy Graves, aye.
Susan Whetstone, aye.
Justin Ellicker, aye.
Is there any opposition? Motion passes. If we can go on to item B, schedule special meeting to discuss the H&H 2020 experience study and to establish the investment rate of return. Who will be handling that? That'd be Hooker and Holcomb and legal counsel.
Right. This is Carolyn. When we spoke with Hooker and Holcomb, I believe it was last week, they had provided us with the experience study that has two different rates of return for our investment assumptions. And we felt that it would probably be a good idea to meet separately because it would probably be an hour to an hour and a half discussion about what the employer contribution should be and what the assumptions should be on the rate of return, and that Raymond James could be helpful with that. So this needs to be done, I believe, Trustee Gormley, this month in order to get the budget in to the Board of Alders.
Yeah, so, right, because we're preparing the budget for March 1st, and we're on a very tight timeline. So, I mean, it would be good to know the number sooner rather than later. So the soonest that we can get the information from a trustee standpoint and then also vote on the matter, then the city, as we're preparing the budget, would know what this board's recommendation is.
So I guess just Leanna will be reaching out to everybody to get a date for this special meeting, and we will send out the experience study to everybody so they have it.
I'd prefer to get, this is Leanne, I prefer to get the date now. It's going to be too much to do back and forth by email for seven people. We have PNF next Thursday. I don't know if there's a day next week that works for everyone that we can quickly decide on now instead of a back and forth email chain.
Can you suggest some dates?
Sure.
I would just say not next Thursday because that's our PNF meeting.
Could you do next Tuesday at this time? Tuesday at 8 a.m.?
I would suggest to keep the same time if that works for everyone. I mean, it should just be a quick agenda and just that one item. So
January Tuesday would 6 at 8 a.m., would that work?
Yes. Does that work for everyone else?
Yeah.
Yes.
Hooker and Holcomb, that works?
Yes.
Okay. So Tuesday.
Just let me say that item B, the determination of the rate of return has in the last, I'd say, 4 or 5 years, at times been, it's a very important matter, and it's has become a contentious issue at times, because obviously the higher the estimated rate of return that is used by the board, the less the employer has to contribute into the plan. And the lower anticipated rate of return means the employer has to contribute more into the plan on an annual basis. And that's been a contentious and emotional issue at times. So it's an important meeting that, you know, we have to, and be honest with you, the trustees took a stronger hand in this over the last 4 years, getting actively involved in this, where usually it had been the city pretty much that was working to determine what that rate of return was, even though the trustees voted on it. I just say it as an aside to make sure that we have good attendance at that meeting, because it's a very critical meeting. If there's no more issues to deal with on B, I'd like to go to item C, Bleichmar, Fonte, and All Securities Litigation. They're one of the law firms that the fund uses to monitor the activity of some of our nefarious people who are managing our money to determine if there's any loss of assets due to a questionable activity on their part. Nancy's here.
A trustee, Segnalik, if I could just give a little bit of background.
Sure,
right in. Nancy makes a presentation. We currently have, SURF currently has three law firms that monitor cases to see if SURF has any interest in those cases, maybe as a plaintiff or as a claimant when there's a settlement. Bleichmar, Fonte, and Gold is not one of our current three law firms. And what we've found is in the past year that none of these law firms are filing claims. So when there's a settlement and there's money to be had for SURF, none of these three law firms were filing claims. And our custodial banks of First State and Northern Trust were not as well. So the idea was brought before the PNF board, let's have one firm that both monitors these cases and also files claims on our behalf. And PNF decided at its December meeting to engage Bleichmar, Fonte, and Ault and to terminate the relationships with their existing. They have two class action. So that's just the introduction to this presentation.
This is Leanna. I'm going to invite them in. But for Hooker and Holcomb, Rich, Dave, and Dan, I don't believe there's anything else we needed them for. If you guys wanted to enjoy the rest of your day, you don't have to be a part of the rest of the meeting.
As long as you don't need us for anything else.
I think that those two items, that was it.
Okay. All right.
Thanks. Thanks, guys. We'll include you on the special meeting for Tuesday.
Yes.
All right. Thanks.
Have a good day.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye, everyone.
Okay, so Nancy and Aaron should be joining. Hi, Nancy and Aaron. Welcome.
Thank you. Good morning. Thank you. Is that our presentation? Yes.
Yes.
PowerPoint. Very good. Aaron, you on? Wait 1 minute. Is Erin on?
It has her listed.
Okay. I think she's on. Okay. Is it okay if I begin?
Yes.
Very good. Well, good morning, trustees of the New Haven SURF Board. Happy New Year to all of you. Thank you for inviting us to speak today. My name is Nancy Kalesa, and I'm a partner at the law firm of Bleichmar, Fonte, and Ault. I know some of you in connection with having represented this board at my prior law firm. For those of you I do not know, I've been practicing securities litigation for about 20 years, and I live in the great state of Connecticut. With me today is my partner, Aaron Woods, And Erin is the head of our claims filing team. She has vast experience in advising institutional investors on recovering investments through filing settlement claims, and she's going to speak in a bit about claims filing services. Today, we're also here to discuss our proposal for portfolio monitoring, claims filing, and securities litigation services. And in sum, we think we can offer a streamlined solution for portfolio monitoring and claims filing services for the New Haven SERF. Basically, what we do is we monitor clients' funds for instances in which they are included in a securities class action and they may be eligible to make a claim. If a client has a very large loss, they may wish to take a more active role in a litigation. But in most instances, a client will not be actively involved in litigation. So in that case, we would provide clients with reporting on cases, including notification of settlements. We also file claims on behalf of our clients in securities class actions, and we can tailor our services to meet your fund's needs. To provide a quick overview of our firm, Blake Marfanti & Auld is a law firm based in New York City. We also have offices in Toronto, Oakland, California, and Westchester, New York. We have litigated dozens of securities class actions that have contributed to the recovery of over $11 billion for investors, including $600 million since our firm was formed. Our claims filing team has over a decade of experience providing claims filing services and currently provides claims filing services for clients who collectively have over $1 trillion in assets under management. Basically, BFA has, through our claims filing services, served to greatly increase our clients' settlement recoveries compared to other operations that are providing recovery service, such as custodial banks or third-party vendors. Our firm focuses on domestic and international securities class actions and other related litigation. So we very much know what's going on in this realm, and we provide very comprehensive services. Just to speak a little bit about some of our other clients, our representative clients include a wide range of institutions, including some of the largest and most sophisticated institutional investors in the world. Some of our representative clients include the Chicago Police, the Miami Police and Fire, the Texas Teachers Retirement System, Detroit Police and Fire, and New Haven Police and Fire had voted to retain us at the December meeting. So if we could just go on to slide, you are on slide two, just to speak briefly about our model. We pride ourselves on putting our clients first and offering bespoke solutions to our clients. We basically provide consistent contact with our clients from start to finish of a case. Three services that we do differently. I think in the realm of U.S. securities litigation, we are very highly selective. We do fewer cases than some others because we really seek to put our clients in quality cases that we think represent credible opportunities for recovery. In non-U.S. securities litigation, we offer impartial advice to our clients. And unlike many firms, we do not fund or take a cut of those cases. With respect to claim form filings, unlike many other firms, we offer global coverage and we file in all matters from securities to antitrust litigation. So in sum, we can offer a very streamlined solution with monitoring the portfolio, with claims filing, and with litigation when needed. If you could just go to slide three. Just to speak a little bit about our extremely selective case recommendations, we are often the dissent with our peers in case recommendations. Oftentimes, we may recommend that our clients do not get actively involved in a litigation, but we will just monitor it monitor the case for them. We don't recommend that our clients get involved in every single case that's out there. Like I said, we only put them in cases that we think represent credible opportunities for recovery. And in terms of our litigation philosophy at the firm, we take cases deep into the eve of trial. We are very outcome driven. We're looking to get the best settlement for our clients. And by taking cases deep into the eve of trial, I mean, we don't settle cases early. We have cases in which we've taken 50 plus depositions to get to the point we needed to be to settle the case. Finally, our firm does not make political contributions. We are committed to the ethical practice of law. We do not make political donations, so we seek to be retained on our merits. As I mentioned, Aaron Woods, my partner, has vast experience in advising institutional investors on recovering investment losses through filing settlement claims. And I'm going to turn it over to her now, and she's going to speak about our claims filing services.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to present to everyone this morning. To turn back to our claims filing services, our firm began filing claim forms for our clients when we founded the firm. We want our clients to really have a one-stop shop when it comes from to securities litigation monitoring, so that you know they see what cases they have exposure to at the outset of the case, and we cover them when the case is settled, and they can recover any funds that may have been lost. This chart on slide 4 gives you an overview of our process. When we onboard clients, we audit their claims. We identify what cases they have exposure to. We assess their trading and file in the best manner that we think will increase their recovery. We track the process and respond to any notices of deficiency from the settlement administrator. And then we report all of these details to our clients. In our process, we have increased recoveries at every step of the way, starting with the onboarding and auditing. When we do an audit of our clients' claim forms, we have found a number of instances in which their prior provider did not catch every claim. In one instance, we found an SEC disgorgement action that the previous provider had not filed and that client was entitled to over $500,000. So we were able to remedy that as part of the audit. And we typically audit a few months back, but we're certainly happy to go back to the beginning of 2020 if that's preferable. We identify the cases in which our clients are eligible to file. And it's important to have a claims filing provider who really assesses the trading when they file the claim. In one instance, when reviewing claims filed for a client, we noticed in the $3 billion Petrofac settlement that the previous provider did not account for intra-fund transfers. And in fixing that discrepancy, we were able to recover over $2 million for that client. Now, of course, that's a very large settlement. But similarly, some providers don't respond to the administrators when they issue notices of deficiency. That's a very important process. Sometimes the administrator just needs more trading data. They might need supporting documentation. And there's a lot of back and forth that goes on there. And I previously worked at a settlement administrator, as did a couple of my team members. So we're well-versed with that process, and we have contacts who can really help us resolve any issues that we encounter. Turning to slide 5, Nancy already mentioned that our claims filing services are completely inclusive of different types of settlements and different jurisdictions around the world. We file all the US securities class action settlements. We also file the antitrust settlements that tend to be a bit more complex, such as the FX settlement, LIBOR, ISDAFIX, GSE, et cetera. There are even a couple of upcoming antitrust deadlines in December or in February and March that we're assessing for clients now. And since we are lawyers, we are used to reviewing plans of allocation, and we will, as I said, you really have to look closely at the plan of allocation and compare that to your client's data to make sure you account for all necessary intricacies in the data and make sure we maximize our clients' recoveries. Slide 6 is an example of a claim form. I'm sure that you've all received one of these in the mail. whether it's you purchased a shoe that has been recalled or you traded in a stock, they tend to be very complex and full of legalese that, you know, I think the best solution is we just handle all of those. You don't have to keep reviewing the claim forms and determining whether your fund has exposure. Slide 7 is an example of our reporting. We send quarterly reports to all of our clients that include, you know, a snapshot of all of our services. We include exposure to U.S. cases, to international cases that still have upcoming claims filing deadlines, to the extent you'd like us to file those for you. And we also will give you a snapshot of our settlements and our claims filing with whether you have exposure, how much exposure it looks to be, and letting you know that we filed those claims on your behalf. In addition to this report, we provide our claims filing clients a specific settlement report that will list all the settlements that we have filed, the estimated recovery, and there's a tab on the spreadsheet that tells you the status. So we'll tell you we submitted this claim, we received a check, we sent this check to your custodian on this specific date, and we'll give you all the necessary details. And of course, if you have any questions or you'd like us to walk you through those reports, we're happy to do so. On slide 8, we have an example of our client portal. Some clients, as I said, we provide all of our reporting quarterly, and we're in touch with our clients very often, as often as they would like. But we also do have a client portal if you'd like to have direct access to some of the data. We have that available as well. Turning to slide 9, I think that Nancy had wanted to do just a very quick overview of our international litigation services.
Sure. So basically, just to quickly discuss the international litigation, we have a highly experienced team that deals with international litigation. They basically have been at the forefront of advising institutional investors on their right and options in the international securities class actions. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this, but we just wanted you to know that that service is available should you have international investments. If you turn to slide 11, just a few words on our track record. Many of our cases have resulted in substantial settlements. To highlight a few, Genworth Financial is a case we're very proud of. We recovered $219 million. It was the largest shareholder recovery ever in the Eastern District of Virginia. And the settlement represented as much as 44% of the damages that would have been recoverable at trial. MF Global is another standout. We recovered $234 million. From various officers, directors, and underwriters. And we reviewed millions of documents that were produced by defendants and third parties and conducted over 50 depositions of former employees of MF Global. If you turn to slide 12, just to talk about a few notable cases that are ongoing. We are currently lead counsel in several high profile cases. Two examples are Teva Pharmaceuticals and Endo International. Both of those cases involve securities fraud stemming from failure to disclose illegal conspiracies to fix the price of generic drugs. Teva is pending in the District of Connecticut, and that case survived the motion to dismiss. It is now in discovery. Likewise for Endo, the case survived the motion to dismiss and is now in discovery. So I'm not going to spend a whole lot more time talking about our cases. I think would probably be best to open the floor to questions. If anyone has any questions, we'd be very happy to address them. Or if there's anything we haven't addressed, please let us know.
I have a question. I realize it's the presiding judge who usually determines what your fees will be. In your recovery process, what are you averaging, your firm averaging on percentage of return? Is it 20%?
I would say the recoveries vary so much depending upon the case. I could see if I could come up with an average number for you, but the cases that we settled, like I was speaking about Genworth, that one was very high. I know the average recovery in some of these cases can be less than 5%. Why we're very proud of our record is Genworth, the settlement represented 44% of recoverable damages. Weatherford and MF Global were also quite high. But I can provide some additional color on that and send it to you.
Yeah, we are going to provide the percentage of recovery of assets and also what your firm's percentage is in terms of fees.
Sure, I can do that. Now, in terms of fees, the fees are capped at 33 1/3. We typically request much less than that. It really depends upon the case, the amount of time that is put into the litigation, the hours. A case that settles much earlier is obviously less expensive than a case that goes into a lengthy trial. But we are very cognizant of the costs. We realize that our fees do come out of any recovery to the class. So there's no direct bill ever to you or to anyone in the class. But the fees are submitted to the court, approved by the court, and then come out of the settlement fund. So we try to do our best to see that a lot of, you know, the maximum amount goes back to the aggrieved investors and shareholders.
And I think just to add one more point for Nancy on the fees. We discuss our fees with our clients, and we usually base the decision, as Nancy said, on the size of the recovery and the phase of the case in which it settles. But certainly before we submitted any fee brief to the court, we would discuss that with you if you are a client in a case, and make sure that you're comfortable with what we're submitting.
Well, the trustees have to approve that, right?
Yes.
Yes. Or
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I can't say, I'm not sure what your exact process is, but definitely the client would approve it before we submitted it to the court.
Nancy or Aaron, this is Carolyn. Can you explain what for your claims filing services your fees are? And one thing that PNF did not vote on was your fees for more complex financial instrument settlements. And can you explain what that means?
Certainly. Our fees for securities class action settlements, it's 5% of the recovery with a cap of $9,500. We set a cap on those recoveries because we're not looking for a windfall. The 5% is really to cover our time and expenses in submitting the claim filings. But we don't think it's right for us to take a very large amount of your recovery if it is a very large recovery. Our claims are typically a cap of $25,000 for the more complex financial instrument cases, because those cases involve a lot more legwork on our side. For securities fraud cases, there are CUSIPs and ISINs in the data that we can search, so it's relatively easy to identify relevant trades. In the financial instrument cases, there is not a universal identifier for those transactions. So, for example, we're working on a settlement now that's for fixing of silver, and there are many different types of trades involved, and we basically have to search our clients' data for silver and then search through, you know, hundreds of thousands of trades to identify the relevant trades. And then we have to make sure if it's a swap or a forward, we match those legs, make sure that they're eligible, they're in the right time frame. So the reason that those fees tend to be higher is because there's a lot more work on our end for those. But the percentage is still 5%.
Carolyn, police and fire, they're going to contract with this law firm to do the actual filing for their claims, right?
Well, yeah, I'm reviewing the contract, and police and fire did approve engaging this firm to file their claims and also
what happened to the other law firm? Was there two other law firms that were doing this for them at one
correct
time?
And two of those law firms also do it for SURF, and then SURF has a third law firm as well.
Police and fire, once they ultimately, when you review the contract with this law firm, assuming that everything's in order and they sign off on it, what happens to the other two law firms that were doing some of their work on this before? They evaporate and go away, or?
Yes, the police and fire voted to terminate the other two law firms. Okay. So once this, as you say, this contract is negotiated and signed, then I'll provide notices of termination to the other two law firms. Now, it's not necessary. You can have as many law firms as you want.
Yeah, I understand that.
I think Raymond James has suggested that it's best to have everything in one place.
Okay. So are you looking for a vote from the trustees today to try to duplicate what police and fire is doing and recommend going with a contract with this law firm?
Well, that's what's before you today, is whether you want to engage this law firm and then second, whether you want to terminate the other two law firms.
Well, as legal counsel, you think it's advisable that we only have one law firm? Is everything for soup and nuts?
Well, for me, it's advisable that you have one firm. You have a firm that files claims. We don't have one right now. And that's my major concern. Whether or not you want to have multiple law firms, I don't have any advice on that. Do you, Derek? Or?
No, I mean, not particularly. I mean, I just think, you know, I think Nancy and Aaron would probably be able to speak to that matter better than I, but it seems a little superfluous to have multiple firms, because then it comes down to, I think, the filing, right, Nancy? If you have multiple firms monitoring and who's going to file. And,
you know, well, none of the other firms file. They don't file. It's in their contracts. They're not filing. But maybe Nancy, you can help us with
this. Yes, sure. Yes. So with regard to the claims filing, you can only have a single firm file your claim. Because it's one, there'd be one filing per claim. So if you had us doing that, we would take care of all of it. In terms of monitoring, you could have multiple firms alerting you to cases. Certainly, we believe we offer a comprehensive and streamlined solution, but if you wish to have more firms, that's up to you. But for the claims, there would be one.
Can you tell me the names of the current firms and what would be the basis of termination? Is it going to be for cause or is it just?
Okay. No, it's just before, because Leanna's better at this than I am. I don't have the three names. I know Labaton Sertero is one, and Leanna.
Yeah, Labaton Sertero and Rudman and Dowd.
Right, and then there's a third one that we can never remember the name of, or I can't.
Yeah, it starts with a K.
But with law firms, you know, usually the professional ethics are that a client can terminate at any time, and our contracts do not have a cause provision, as would probably be unethical to have that. So it's just a simple letter once you guys decide what you want to do.
And are these local firms? Are they New Haven?
No, not at all. They're New York firms.
Okay. Thank you.
Well, the trustees have a course of action they'd like to pursue through a vote. Want to sleep on it?
Well, I strongly urge you to engage this firm to file the claims. Nobody has done this for a year, and I'm very, very concerned about
it. Okay, I would like to make a motion to approve. Forgive me, I don't know how to say the name. Contracting.
Like Mar Fonte and Old. Thank you.
Thank you.
No worries.
Mr. Chair, Mark Petrosimone, I'll second Trustee Susan Whetstone's.
Motion made and properly seconded. Is there discussion on this motion?
This is Leanna. Are we keeping the other three firms?
Well, maybe we could do that as separate votes, Leanna.
Okay.
That's okay.
All right. No discussion on the motion. All those in favor indicate by identification if you are an aye.
Mark Petrosimone, aye.
Kathy Graves, aye.
Susan Whetstone, aye.
Michael Gormany, aye.
Justin Elker, aye.
No one in favor of opposition? No abstentions? The motion carries. Thank you. Well, you'll have a contract document submitted to legal counsel for review.
But Trustee Fagnelic, does anyone want to make a motion with respect to the other three firms? It's not necessary, but I just wanted to make sure that doesn't get lost.
Yeah. Well, what's the board's pleasure?
I would make a motion.
They'll be stepping on each other if they have too many of them.
I would make a motion that we terminate the existing firms.
I'll second it. This is Kathy Graves.
Okay. So Trustee Whetstone made the motion. Trustee Graves is second it. Is there discussion on this motion? If not, a motion been properly made and second. All in favor indicate by identification.
Susan Whetstone, aye.
Kathy Graves, aye.
Michael Gormany, aye.
Justin Elker, aye.
Mark Petrosimone, aye.
No opposition, no abstentions. The motion carries. Now, Attorney Cohn, we're going into executive session on two subsequent issues. Can we go into executive session once for both of them and entertain? Yes. Or do you have to have separate?
Just indicate who you want to remain in for both executive sessions and the reasons, and you can go in at once.
All right. Can someone make a motion to go to executive session and indicate who will be staying in terms of staff and legal counsel?
Thank you.
Thank you very much for your time today. We're honored to represent you and thrilled to work with you again. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Right, we entertain going into executive session for items D and E.
Mr. Chair, I'll make a motion that we go into executive session to discuss items D and E on the agenda. And of course, leave it up to you who you need to have included.
Trustee Petrosimone has made a motion to go into executive session. Can it be seconded by another trustee, please?
I second. Susan Whetstone, second.
Okay, and I think that the obviously legal counsel has to be present in executive session. Staff have to be present in executive session. I think that's it, right, Carolyn?
Correct.
Okay.
I think I suggest Yvonne Duzant should possibly be in there as well for one of the items.
Who's that?
For workers' comp.
Okay.
Which item?
Workers' comp also, representative. All right, was a motion made to that effect by a trustee? Trustee Petrosimone made the motion, seconded by Susan.
Chair Signal, could you say which item that workers' comp representative needs to be in executive session for? That's important.
Item D only.
Yep, item D.
Damien, do we stay here or you put us in a room?
Yeah, you'll just stay here.
Okay, thank you.
Right, motion been made and second. Is there any discussion on this motion?
Go in your room, Derek.
In the absence of motion properly made and second, no discussion on the motion. All those in favor indicate by identification if you are an aye.
Susan Whetstone, aye.
Michael Gormany, aye.
Justin Elker, aye.
Mark Petrosimone, aye.
All right, there's no opposition and no abstentions. Motion carries. We are going to executive session.
Kathy Graves just called me. She's waiting to try to get back into general session. You're on mute.
She's not in the waiting room.
Kathy, she's sitting down the waiting room.
Only Jerry was.
Yes, she is. Waiting for a host to start the meeting. And it says,
She's not in the, have her try to call back in.
Hello.
Try to call back in. Okay. Nice. She's going to call back.
Can you hear me?
Yes, Jerry, we can.
Thank you. For some reason, I didn't get into that breakout room. Where are we now? Liana.
Do we need to vote on coming out of executive? We need to vote on coming out of executive session.
No, we don't need to vote on coming out of executive session.
Okay. So we just need to vote then on item 3E. Let me let Kathy in. Okay, Kathy's joined.
Is there a motion on item 3E?
I make a motion that we accept the low bid from Markham for the election services.
Motion been made by trustee.
I'm sorry, I forgot to identify myself, Susan Whetstone.
Trustee Whetstone, is there a second?
I'll second it, this is Justin Oliker.
Mayor Oliker, second the motion. Is there a discussion on the motion? In the absence of motion properly made and second, all in favor indicate by saying aye by identification.
Susan
Oliker, aye.
Kathy Graves, aye.
Michael Gormley, aye.
Mark Salier.
Yeah, he gave the thumbs up.
Mark, you need to say.
Okay.
For the record.
No opposition, no abstentions, motion carries. If we can go on to item F, update on the progress of the MOUs to comply with the IRS ruling.
So as you recall, and maybe Susan, you weren't on the board, then we received a favorable IRS ruling that provides that if a SERF retiree retires on a service-connected disability, they can get the same type of favorable tax treatment that the PNF retirees get. And when the IRS, which is 50% up of their prior salary, becomes non-taxable to the extent that the benefit is that amount. The IRS combed through our 13 union contracts where our pension provisions are, and they found little mistakes in them in that these pension provisions did not clearly track the workers' comp language in the state statute, which is arising out of in the course of employment. Sometimes they'd say arising out of or in the course of employment, that kind of mistake. Scott Nabel, we wrote MOUs so that they're all correct, they're identical, what the IRS wanted. Scott Nabel has done an incredible job of chasing down the unions, particularly during COVID, where this wasn't their highest priority, it's understandable. And we're down to 3144 is supposed to sign today, and there's one Board of Ed union that he's tracking down, but we should probably in the next week have this whole thing wrapped up in a neat bow for the IRS. And I just wanted to report that.
Very good. Any questions, comments, criticisms? If not, if we can go on to item G, update on pension portal.
This is Leanna Ambersley. The update is just notifying you guys we're on track with Hooker and Holcomb for the online pension portal to be live in February. We're still holding meetings with them every other week. They're just finishing up entering workers' comps breaks, any last minute changes that we gave to them. And then they should be sending out notification to participants in February, and it should be going live at some point in February as well. So again, this is the online portal. So employees will be able to, from their own homes, go online and give themselves their own pension estimates, and then request also final estimates as well.
Thank you, Leanne. I'll just say that'll be a major, major breakthrough in the administration of the plan with this capability to go online. Employees can go online and try to ascertain very closely to what their actual pension will be. If we can go on to item 10, any old business to be conducted? If we go on to item 11, any new business that should be conducted? If not, I would like to return back to item 1, investment report. Derek and Wendy.
Okay, thank you. Ian, if you would be so kind to pull up the performance report. So we talked a lot about expenses and outflows and a lot of not so fun things to talk about. So today I'm going to talk about how great we're doing and how much money we've made. So that's a good thing. Right here, Leanne. So this is through December 31st, so calendar year end, obviously not fiscal year end, but calendar year end returns. I wanted to just point this out. There's a few things. These are just the broader indices. There's a few things that I just want to highlight. I highlighted last month as well. But I want to just point everybody to, I know it's a lot going on in this chart, but basically the top section are U.S. equities. If you look at S&P 500 quarter four versus year to date, and then look at S&P 500 equal weight year to date quarter four, I want to show how that's flip-flopped. And that was something that we talked about over the last few months. We talked about, I don't know if you all remember, but the S&P 500 is a market cap weighted index, where the bulk of the performance was coming from, the tech stocks, the larger names, we call them the FANG stocks, Facebook, Amazon, Google, Netflix. So that was a major contributor, a major driver for the S&P 500 returns. And what we saw over the last handful of months, did everybody just lose that view? My view just changed. That's okay. I just don't know if everybody saw what I saw. Over the last few months, we talked about somewhat of something called mean reversion, or where there's participation from other sectors, more broader participation from the lagging sectors. And you can see that through the equal weight S&P 500. So that's just weighting all the different sectors equally versus a market cap weighted. And you can see quarter four of 2020, the participation shifted from the S&P 500 market cap weighted to the equal weighted. So what does that mean? That means that there's more of a robust expansion among stocks. The rotation that we all talked about happened very strongly. So that's good. And that's also highlighted in the growth versus value. I want to show Russell 1000 growth. So those are large cap growth and Russell 1000 value. Look at the difference from year to date. Well, that's year to date. And the 1 year number on Russell 1000 growth versus Russell 1000 value. You can see Q4, huge participation from Russell 1000 value versus growth. So that also highlights some of the moves that we talked about making and we did make over the last several months. We shifted money from growth to value. Now, growth obviously certainly still made money, but value made, large cap value made more money. And then the real winner here is small cap. If you look down to Russell 2000, look at year to date was 19.96. You look at Q4 with 31.37. So we shifted our portfolio heavily into small caps and participated in that excess return. So those are some very, very big victories for this fund. The strategic moves and strategic allocations really helped drive performance of this fund overall. So I think that those are some very notable mentions. We need to go scroll ahead two pages. OK, Okay, great. So as you can see, SURF's total assets are $211,600,000 roughly. You can see just the last 3 months, so Q4, the fund's up 9.01. Year to date, so basically the calendar year, the fund was up 16.26%. And fiscal year, so the fiscal year obviously is July 1st to June 30. So July 1st through December 30, the fund was up 14.8%. So clearly on track to meet your benchmark and your bogey of 7.75%. So doing very, very well. You know, 1 year, 16.26%. That's a rolling 1 year. Obviously through December 30th calendar year. 2 years, 17.7% per year rate of return. 3 years, 9.58% per year for 3 years. So handily meeting and exceeding all of your benchmarks or your bogeys, the 7.75 bogey for the last 3 years. So that should be a favorable report that HGH is going to compose for you, their study. So that should bode well for you. There's a few things I want to point out as well. Just some outperformance and underperformance. I'll save large cap growth. I just want to skip large cap growth for a minute because I'm going to make a recommendation. But, you know, the fund, like we've mentioned, shifted money from large cap growth to large cap value over the last several months. And you can see that was a good move. The last 3 months, Cook and Beeler, who a manager that was underperforming, is now shining. I'm really proud of them and happy to see them outperform. So the last 3 months, they're up 21.4% versus their passive benchmark of 16.25%. Year to date, they're really outperforming as well, 5.28 versus 2.79. And fiscal year to date, they're 31.38 versus 22.75. So they're doing a really nice job, and they've come back quite a bit. Some really strong, solid performance in Q4. So you can see that strong performance has basically gotten them above their benchmark or passive benchmark, which is what we like to see. So that's a great job by Cook and Beeler. Thor and Thaler also has done a good job long-term. See year-to-date, fiscal year-to-date, and over 2 years handily beating their passive benchmarks. WCM the same. You know, WCM, we talk about them every month. They just continue to rock and roll and make a bunch of money for the fund. So those are all great managers, great active managers. I'm really happy to have them part in the quiver. So now to the contrary, Clearbridge Large Cap Growth, they've been on watch for the last 3 quarters. They've been constant underperformers, significant underperformers to the passive benchmark. So it's our formal recommendation to terminate Clearbridge Large Cap Growth, park the money in a Vanguard Large Cap Growth Index Fund passively, and we will conduct an active manager search in the coming months. There won't be any rush to do it. We will start working on it. But again, if we can find somebody that outperforms, great. If not, we'll just keep it passively. But we have a formal recommendation to terminate Clearbridge Large Cap Growth and go into a Russell 1000 Growth passive index fund.
A recommendation made by our finance consultant. Is there trustees like to put that into a motion?
Mr. Chair, this is Mark Petrosimone. I recommend, I would like to make a motion that we approve the recommendation by Derek Champagne.
This is Kathy Graves. I second.
The motion been made second. Is there discussion on the motion? If not, all in favor indicate by saying aye. Identification.
Kathy Graves, aye.
Michael Gormley, aye.
Susan Whetstone, aye.
Mark Petrosimone, aye.
Is Mayor Oliver still here?
No, he dropped off.
Okay. There's no opposition, no abstentions. The motion will carry. Anything further here?
Yep, I'll just move on quickly. I won't take a lot of time. So those are your equities. The next page, fixed income and alternatives, all doing well. You can see your total fixed income portfolio for the month up 2%, 3 months just under 5%. Year to date, so bonds for the year made 13.4%, just under 13.4%. That's also a real driver to the overall portfolio. Your eat well money, i.e. your stocks, have contributed handling the double digits, and your sleep well money, your bonds, have also handily contributed to your returns. So really solid performance all around. Alternatives, there some of these are not marked yet because we're waiting for Q4 returns. Obviously, a lot of the illiquids, we're just waiting for quarterly returns. So I'm just going to, glaze over these pretty quickly. The private vehicles, the private real estate, private equity, those returns are not updated. So I'm just going to skip to the next page, please. Page 7 just shows our hedge funds. Alcyon, they presented last month, talked a little bit about their returns, and you can see they have handily beat their passive benchmarks. And so is Balyasny, the Atlas Enhanced Fund. They've done a great job as well. So our hedge funds year to date were up 34%. It's really amazing when we have all sectors firing on all cylinders, how well the fund can do. So really happy with the allocation. Really happy with the returns. We are waiting from our reporting division to get us a quartile ranking to see where SERF ranked among other public pension funds of its size. But I imagine we're probably, definitely top quartile, maybe even top decile of other public funds similar to SERF. So we should have those numbers on Friday. Once I have that report, I'll circulate it to all the trustees or maybe send it to Leanne and she can do so. Other than that, I don't have anything further with our performance report unless there's any questions from anybody. No questions? Okay. Just moving on to the other report there. So it's been a long meeting. I'm not going to take a lot of time considering I don't have much to say other than everything that we talked about happening is happening. So like I mentioned earlier, there's been some strong response, strong optimism in the market. With President-elect Biden coming in, he's coming out with a monstrous, there's $2 trillion stimulus package on top of the $900 billion relief package that was already passed. So basically, a lot of this support for the economy, support for the market is positive for the stock market, positive for risk assets. We're starting to see some changes. We're in the beginning of quarter four earnings season, Friday and today. The banks have been reporting. Morgan Stanley came out today. They beat their earnings handily. On Friday, there were a few banks that came out and beat their earnings handily. So you're seeing some participation. This chart on the lower right-hand side, if you looked at this a few months ago, it would have been exactly opposite. The IT and consumer discretionary up on top and energy was on the bottom. Now you can see energy and financials are up on top. So this is just a reversion to growth, more of the value type sectors and more expansion into various areas of the market that did not participate. Next page. One of the things, so we're recognizing that the market is sizzling. The market is sizzling. Unemployment is, we're still far from full unemployment, so that has to come down. We had a job claim jumped was to 965,000. So that's bad news for the American worker, but it's good news for the market, unfortunately, because all that does is support additional fiscal stimulus. Excuse me. And stimulus is what it's money added into the system, and when there's money in the system, when people have money in their pockets, they spend, and markets react positively. One thing that we see, so just to boil it all down, what do we see? What headwinds do we see? Obviously, any unforeseen setbacks with the COVID vaccine, as of right now, the market is priced in, COVID relief within the year, towards the end of the year. So we're seeing that relief rally. The only other headwind potentially that we see is inflation. So there's a lot of chatter amongst a lot of the smart money about inflation headwinds, but those inflationary headwinds, we don't see them to be, if at all, a factor until next year. So we basically have a year to make money in equities. We saw the 10-year creep up quite a bit, and the rate on the 10-year went up, but we have a supportive Fed. We think it's a temporary hike on the 10-year. We think that will come back down and settle. So we are believing that it's lower for longer run rates. So there's really not much headwind this year. So we're pretty bullish on stocks. We're pretty bullish that, we think high single digits, low double digits for domestic stocks, international stocks a little bit more, in emerging markets. We can scroll through. I don't know if there's anything else. If you could go to two more pages, Leanna, please. Great, actually, perfect. So this just shows number of S&P 500 companies beating estimates. It's the 80% of companies beat their bottom line estimates. That's massively above the average. The 15-year average, about 68% of companies beat their bottom line estimates. A lot of that is due to some of the, basically when the estimates come out, they're lower estimates due to the COVID situation. So a lot of companies thought they were going to lose more money, but they actually wound up beating those estimates. So a lot of that was, some of that might have been considered artificial. So we think Q4 estimates are more right-sized. So we might not see as many beats, but we still expect a lot of these companies to do well. Earnings estimates are coming in strong. The next page just shows it graphically. You see the earnings surprises on the high side. I mean, historically high. We haven't seen it this high pretty much ever. And you can see we expect them to come down. So we still expect, historic earning for Q4 from companies which are supportive of stocks. But we just don't think it'll be as good as Q2 and Q3. Technically speaking, the next few pages just show what the market's doing, trading, it's basically a nice sideways trading pattern. We look at stocks technically, fundamentally, everything looks pretty strong. This is a small cap space here. We talked about small caps during the performance. We would be surprised if we see a little bit of a slowdown in small caps, cooling off. We don't necessarily think that there's going to be a crash in small caps, but perhaps just the rate of ascension might slow, which is okay because, we have an active manager there that's done a good job of protecting your money should there be any sort of correction in the small caps. And we're not overweight. We're equal weight where we should be historically to policy. That's pretty much all I have. You can scroll through a couple more. You just talked about the momentum trade. This trick page right here on the bottom right hand corner, just one chart I would like to point out. So this is just what I talked about earlier, consumer discretionary versus S&P equal weight. You can see that this is a relative trade, and you can see that discretionary has outperformed staples. So that's a good thing. Basically, just says that the momentum, so there's different ways to look at the market. The momentum trade is on. So a lot of the momentum stocks, the healthcare, technology, biotech, all those types of stocks will continue to run, in our opinion. And then the last chart just talked about ISM. So these are manufacturing orders. And when ISM is above 50, we're in good waters. And you can see we're blasted way above 50. So this supports performance of industrial companies as well. So really, barring any unforeseen issues, anything, any surprises, panics, market looks good. We're pretty happy. We think the allocation is pretty right sized. We like our value tilts. We like our small cap participation, our international equity. So everything that's been done over the past several months to the year has been very, very strong for your portfolio. You can see that in results of the assets. I don't ever remember the fund being this high, over $200 million. So things are working, things are well. You guys should all be very happy with the job you've done as trustees and fiduciaries here. So with that being said, unless there are any questions, we don't have anything further to add.
Derek, can I ask one question?
Of course.
The S&P 500 quarterly earning, the large increase that you have there, could that be, obviously, must be partly due to the Tesla joining the S&P 500? Does that have, like, any type
of... Well, it definitely has an impact, yeah. So the weighting of, you know, so again, the S&P 500, did you say the equal weight, Mark, or the just the S&P 500?
The S&P quarterly earnings that you were talking about.
Right. So yes. I don't know that Tesla has not reported their earnings, their Q4 earnings yet. So that was not considered.
All right.
You know, but the expectations are that broad brush over all sectors, there will be solid earnings through Q4 for S&P 500 companies. So that's the expectation. Not just, you know, a few stocks like it was very much a bifurcation of returns in the first half of the year. It was just a handful of sectors that did very, very well. But we're seeing participation from all sectors at this point, it appears, which is good.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions for our financial consultant? If not, I think we've concluded all the required business for today. And can I ask for a vote for an adjournment?
Mr. Chair,
this is Kathy Graves. So moved.
Second.
Is there a second?
Mark Petrosimone, second.
Motion made and second. Is there any discussion on this motion? In the absence of all in favor, indicate by saying aye by identification. Indicate aye by identification, please.
Mark Petrosimone, aye.
Michael Gorman, aye.
Kathy Graves, aye.
Susan Whetstone, aye.
There are no abstentions, no opposition. We will see you on Tuesday of next week. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Leanna.
Leanna, do you want us at that meeting on Tuesday?
I think you should be there. Okay.